Good to see you this evening. Paul the Apostle, Peter the Apostle, Jude and others spend a lot of time talking about testing, talking about those days where we are taken to the edge of our ability to bear and are tested. Sometimes it's called a test. Sometimes it's called a fiery ordeal. Sometimes it's called an affliction. Sometimes it's the point of it is to find out what we're made out of, but the opportunity is always there for us to turn to God. There's a great story in the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 15, and that's where we're going to go. And that was David's big test. He's had several. He spent much of his youth running from the king, King Saul, and he hid in caves, and we've talked about that in recent weeks. But here we have him as he is a king now. He has a grown family. He's well established in his rule, and his son Absalom rebels against him. It was a long plot that Absalom's had. We don't know when he started it, but we do know what he eventually did. When he had all of his players in place and all of the people that were a part of his conspiracy there, he tells his father he wants to go to Hebron, that he had made a vow to God and he wanted to keep it. And his father told him to go. But when he got there, it wasn't to worship God or to fulfill any vow, it was to put in motion the plan. People were secretly sent to every city in the kingdom, and they rallied the units, the cells that they had activated. There's just like a terrorist plot, isn't it? They activated those, and they had a signal. When you hear the trumpet blast, everyone starts shouting that Absalom is king. Long live Absalom. To the people that were part of the plot, it was the signal for them to rise up against David. To those that were not, many of them were ignorant people, and they, when they heard the shouting, they thought if it's on TV, it must be true. So they heard the shouting, and they think it must be. We have a new king. And all of the excitement that would go with that, and all of the opportunities that would go. And to others, it would come by such a surprise that maybe they would think that the whole world has already changed. You know, lots of times we equate noise and parades and all of that with the truths. Why dictators have those big parades with all of those people. I remember in the country of Romania, when the Ceausescu, the dictator, when he would get in a bind, when people would criticize him or something, he would take over all three channels they had in that country on television, and he would have a speech, and he would fill his plaza of his palace with thousands of people. They were handpicked, and they knew just when to respond and what to say. And so if you was watching it on television, you would hear him make a speech, and it would seem like everybody in the world agrees with him. So who am I to disagree? Maybe you've seen speeches that Hitler made, like in Nuremberg and other places, where 100,000 people would be there, and they would all be chanting and crying out that they agreed with him. If you watched it, you might think that everybody in the world would believe that. 100,000 people, that's a lot of people. But it wasn't even a majority of that city. Certainly wasn't a majority of that country or the world, but it looked good, didn't it? And that's what Absalom does. He has it all set up. And on the signal, they start their chants and they start their movements. And the people start gathering to Absalom. Among those who came, some that was in the conspiracy was one of David's choice advisors, one of his cabinet members. And so there were people that defected, that were trusted people, that shouldn't have defected. In verse 13, we see a messenger comes to David, and he tells him the hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom. He's saying it's over. The people have gone out to Absalom. We're done. And David believes that, and he says, then let us get quickly out of this city. We'll be trapped here, and we will lose everything. We'll have to regroup somewhere in the wilderness. David was more comfortable fighting in the wilderness than he was from the palace porch. And so they start this whole thing. He says in verse 14, rise, let us flee, or else there will be no escape for us from Absalom. Let's go quickly, lest he overtakes us quickly and bring down ruin upon us and strike the city with the edge of a sword. David is not only worried about regrouping, he's worried about all of those people in that city and what would happen to them. And so he wants to get the battle in a place where the civilians won't be hurt. It's a terrible time. And they're leaving the city. He says, if we go a little farther here, the king's servant says, the servants are ready, whatever you want, we'll do it. And so the king went out of his household. And after him, the people start to come. Verse 18, it says, the servants pass him by. And as the people, the various ones that belonged to him, that were loyal to him, there are 600 Gittites. And they followed him from Gath, and they pass on before him. When the king sees them, verse 19, he says to Ithah, the Gittite, why do you also go with us? Go back and stay with the king, for you are a foreigner. You are also an exile from your home. You came only yesterday, and shall I today make you wander about with us, since I do not know where? Go back and take your brothers with you, and may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you. And one of the groups that are there are recent additions to his forces. There are people who were refugees from their own land. Gath was a Philistine city. If they came out of Gath to join David, this would kind of make them enemies of the Philistines. And he looks at this man, the leader of this group, and he tells him, why don't you just go back? This isn't your fight. No one's going to suspect anything about you. You're a foreigner. You're not a part of this. You can stay there. You don't have to go through what we're going through. This is an amazing thing, because it was also this day of testing for David was also a day of testing for Ithah. And in verse 21, we see him give his answer, his pledge. He says, as the Lord lives and as my Lord the King lives, wherever my Lord the King shall be, whether for death or for life, there also will your servant be. If I was putting this in a movie, he would click his heels at this point and put his hand over his heart. Or he would take his sword and he would hit it on his shield. And he's saying to him, I'm with you. If you die, I die. If you live, I live. If you go to the wilderness, I go to the wilderness. I didn't come to Jerusalem to live in Jerusalem. I came to Jerusalem to live with you. And I'm going to belong to you. Now, a couple of things happen here that are very important. This is a dark day, and there's not very much good news. And David, as he is talking to this man, he offers him a way out of this dilemma that he's in. He's made a pledge, and now he's telling me it's all right for you not to keep it. But this man, he makes a confession. You know, this morning we talked about calling on his name. We talked about what it means to say that Jesus is the Son of God. What's involved in that, what we believe in our heart and when we confess with our mouth. This is one of those kinds of things. This man is opening his heart and saying, I belong to you. If it means I die, I die. If it means I have to live in a cave, I live in a cave. I belong to you. It's almost like a prophecy. It's certainly an illustration of what the Christian confession ought to be. We could have looked at what Ruth told Naomi. We could look at, these are all through the Old Testament, and they are there on purpose. You know, the Holy Spirit could have chosen lots of stories, but this man's conversation, I wonder how many conversations David had that day with people as they're passing by, as they're saying things. Wouldn't you like to hear what his men would say and his friends would say and his servants would say as they would come by him? Maybe some people who had been in the wilderness with him when he ran from Saul says, we know where a good cave is, and that kind of bitter humor that they might use here. But we see this man gives this beautiful, heartfelt announcement. This beautiful, heartfelt, it's a covenant kind of statement. This beautiful, courageous confession of love and fidelity. And that's what we see him say here. This is an amazing thing. And when we read it, we almost want to cry. When we read it, our heart kind of jumps a little bit, trying to imagine what it would be like, trying to get everything, saying to people, leave that, we can't carry it. We're going to be walking most of the way. I know it's precious to you, but you need to leave that. And where are the children? We don't want to leave anything behind and all of the stuff that we would be saying back and forth and the arguments we would be making. And David is being tested, taken down. You know, he said something kind of like this when he goes against Goliath, as he tells King Saul his fidelity to God and how God trusted him. But he was a boy then. Lots of times boys don't think about everything that's involved. What is he really risking? His life. And lots of times when we're young, everything is really clear to us, isn't it? Right and wrong. Well, he's not young anymore. And everything he's thinking about is being clouded with all this other stuff. And God gives him this gift of this man who knows who David is. And he knows David's God. And he's deliberately chosen to align himself with him. And Absalom just won't do. You're the reason I'm here. Now, this not only was a blessing for Etah, but it was also a blessing for David, because it was kind of a reminder of who he is and the expectations. When we have our day of testing, we need to know that there are consequences to our decisions, and we need to know, and it's a blessing when it's pointed out to us that people are counting on us, that there's something else going on here. And so this man makes this confession. I love this passage. I love this chapter as we see he makes his pledge. And it says in verse 23 in the same chapter, he says, and all the land wept. Well, of course, they're not weeping over in Absalom's. This is a figure of speech. In his camp, they're laughing. They're probably telling crude stories. They're probably talking about what they're going to do when they win. But those people who are of the thinking of David, as they see him go out, the people in the shops and the people on the way, the farmers and others, as they're looking and are seeing this thing, they know this is a sad day. So on our day of testing, is usually not only a difficult day, but sometimes it's a sad day, because part of the test is we're taken down, we're sifted. Jesus told Peter, well, Satan's going to take you and he's going to sift you like sifting grain. And you're going to be separated. All of you is not grain. Some of you is chaff. And it's all going to get taken out. And this is going to happen. And so it's sometimes a sad thing. All the people, they weep. And they weep aloud. It's not wiping away a tear and hoping nobody sees it. There's wailing. There's crying. There's people that think nothing will ever be the same again. Because when we go through our day of testing, we're also afraid. It's a fearful time. And when he was a boy and he faced the giant, he seemed like he had no fear at all. He's not a boy anymore. And here's 600 people that might die because of my decision. And here's these other people and my own children. Besides that, it's my child that's doing this. It's a horrible thing. And then here come the priest, and they're carrying the Ark of the Covenant. I mean, don't you know he nearly had a heart attack when he saw that? And they're coming down there, you know. And I don't know if they were saying, Absalom's not going to get this. But here they are. And they stand their guard with the ark. They set the ark down. And the men who know God the best are standing there willing to go with him. And they're standing there observing and looking over this whole thing. So this is what a day. David calls them to him and he says, take the ark back to Jerusalem. If I get to come back, I will see it there. If I don't, I don't know what God's got planned for me. But you need to go back. Maybe they argued with him. You kind of get the idea. They said, no, I'm not going back there. So he gives them a job. He said, I know who you are. I know how faithful you are to God. That's one thing we have in common. We love God and we follow him. And I know that you love me. So I need somebody in the city. I need somebody that knows what's going on. And I need somebody that'll tell me, because if I don't know what's going on, I can't win this thing. And so they go back. Take it back. He says in verse 25, this is the Lord's business. And the Lord can defend his own ark. And we need to do what falls for the Lord. In verse 30, it tells us he's barefooted. Whether this was to show humility on his part, because they also covered their heads, or whether it was because of the haste of leaving the city. And then another advisor comes in verse 32, and he's got dirt on his head and his clothes are torn. This was what you did when you were in deep mourning, so that everyone who saw you coming will know that there's something wrong here. And he comes because, as far as he's concerned, this is the worst day he's ever seen. And he comes and he's going to go with David. And David tells him about the job that he has, and he reminds him of this. And he also, we see there is a, in chapter 16, verse 1, there is a servant of Mephibosheth. Remember, he was one of Saul's descendants that David had actually let sit at his table and eat with him. And this servant comes and he's bringing raisins and bread and fruit and wine. And David says, where's your master? And he tells him he's part of the revolution. So even down to the servants of the enemies, every house is making decisions where they're going to stand, who they're going to stand with. Another of David's relatives in verse 5 of chapter 16 is standing on a hillside as they walk through this valley, and he's cursing David and throwing stones at him. The Bible says the mighty men, those 30 men that were the most valiant, they surround David on his right and his left, and they want to kill this man. And David says, no, this is God's business, and God will take care of this. And so as they walk, this guy gets more enthusiastic, and he follows along with them, walking along the ridge, throwing rocks and dirt at themselves. The chapter ends by telling us they got to the Jordan, and there they camped and were refreshed. There's things we need to remember when we're involved in our day of testing. We need to know that sometimes the day of testing is a day of betrayal. It's almost always a day of grief, because part of the test is what you lose, that you are almost lose, that you don't know if you can live without it. But it's also a day of decision. And the day of testing is not something to be avoided. It's something to recognize it for what it is. It's hard to recognize it, isn't it? Because when you're really going through all of that pain, it's hard to see anything good that could possibly be going on. It's not really like being a young man with a sling going out against a giant, because He knew he could run. He knew he could do these things. He also knew God. It was all real simple to him. This kind of a test is much more complicated. It's really not, but it seems more complicated. It seems like, you know, that God might not be as close to me as he was when I was a kid. And so we have this testing. When we're tested like this, what do we find out? We find out who we really are. And that's what's happening all up and down the road. That's what's happening. That's what's happening in the city. That's what's happening in the court and in the temple. Not all of the priests came down there with him, but these men did. Not all of the advisors that went with David, but some did. And this testing that's going on here, when we're put in the pressure position, we find out. What do we find out? We find out, do we really believe what we say we believe? Do we really believe that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord? Do we really believe that? Do we really believe that, what have we done before, that God is eternal and that God has all power? Do we really believe that God is everywhere and that God knows everything? Do we really believe that he loves us? When we're tested, we find out what we really believe. And if we pass that test, when everything is taken away from us, David is not, is... He recognizes this for what it is. Maybe other people don't, but he's been there. He's had everything he owned taken away from him, and he's gone through this period of testing. I'm sure he was surprised that he got to do it again. I'm sure he didn't want to ever go through it again, but he remembers this thing, and this is why David acts, even though he's heartbroken, even though he's crying, even though it's cutting him when he finds out people he thought was his friends weren't, and surprised him when he found out people that he thought were not his friends were his friends. All of those things are happening to him. But what do we see in those two chapters? We see David constantly pointing towards God and putting himself in the hands of God. This is the reason God loves him like he does, because when he's boiled down, taken down to the very essence of who he is, he comes up pretty good. He comes up as a man who is seeking after God and wanting to follow him. This is like Job when he went through his time of testing. This is the same kind of thing that we see with Paul when he is being beaten and all of those things. The more they did to him, the more the good that he was comes out. Testing is a time not only of pain and betrayal and grief, but it's also a time of decision and revelation. It's good to know, isn't it? It's good to know. If you've been through a test and you find out that your wife is going to stay with you no matter what happens, that's not a bad thing to know, is it? It comes at a high price, but it's not a bad thing to know. You find out when you're tested who your friends are. It comes at a high price, but it's good to know, isn't it? You wouldn't take for that information. You find out that God is faithful and when we go through the test successfully. And you find out that you really are the person that you think you are. You find out who you really are. Now, some of these people, that old Mephibosheth, for example, when he comes back, he makes up all kinds of excuses and everything. We know who he is. He's a broken crutch. He's no one you can depend on. He's a liar and a person that looks out for his own interest. But some of them weren't like that. One old man shows up with food when they were hungry and stood, and he wasn't going anywhere. Absalom could come and get him, but it didn't matter. And David remembers this, and it blesses him when he finds this out. Not every day is a good day. When we're tested like that, we find out the true person that we are. We find out who never was a Christian and who is a true Christian. We find out who never was your friend and who is your friend. And those that truly are, well, we found out too that David was truly a man after God's own heart. I don't know what test you're going through, but I'm sure you are. If you're not, you're about to. If you've never been tested, you will be. It happens to everybody. It doesn't come when you plan it. It doesn't come when you can do something about it ahead of time and make preparations for it. It's the kind of thing that's going to take you down as Jesus told Peter, you're going to be sifted. But when you come through it, if you come through it by faith, you will know then who you are. And you'll be qualified for something better. When James talked about it, he said that testing produces steadfastness. He says it toughens you. It makes you able to do greater things. It's a qualifier. These mighty men that were with David, why were they in that circle around him? Not because of who their parents were, not because of how much money they had, not because of their education, not because they were great people in strategy, but because they had stood the test, and when things got rough, they didn't run. And that was the thing that set them apart. That's the thing about David here in this story. I love this chapter, and I hate this chapter. I love reading about David and thinking about it, but I hate it because the truth is that our adversary, the devil, is our adversary, not just a adversary. And he has your name, and he's looking. And at the time when he thinks he can do the most to you, he comes. And testing will come. It will come, and it's a day, what does he say? Pain, betrayal, grief, difficulty. The thing that makes it a test is, what do we do with that? And where do we go? And what do we do? David didn't do like Hitler did. When Hitler was at the end of his rope, he decided to flood the subways where the sick were and send the little boys out to hold on anything to stay alive another day. David said, let's go in the wilderness where nobody will be hurt except us. Don't you love him? Don't you love him? Don't you know that God did? When Job is being tested, what does God say? Have you considered this man? This is my man. This man, I know what he will do. I know who he is. And when it's over with, Job knows who he is. There is something good that comes even from testing. We don't seek it. We don't sign up, say, give me some cancer. That's what I want. We don't do that kind of stuff. We don't look for it. But we ought to recognize what it is. When James talks about it, he even puts the word joy in the same sentence with testing. He said, count it all joy, my brethren, when you face various trials. How in the world could joy be a part of it? He didn't mean it was fun. He didn't mean it was hilarious. He didn't mean it was something that we want to do every day. But the joy is the successful finishing of this task and getting through it. I don't know what your test is, but I'm sure you're going to have one if you're not in the middle of it. The question is always, what are we going to do with that? Don't you love Itha? Don't you love him? Don't you see as he's standing there proud? This is not because he's the toughest guy that ever came along. This is because this man makes a decision. I'm going with you and your God. That's what I'm going to do. I'm not going with that weasel that's coming up the road now. I'm not doing that. Don't you love him? Don't you love him? Don't you love that young servant of Mephibosheth who said this could cost him everything? He could be dead when he gets back to town. But they're going to get thirsty, and they're going to be hungry, and they have a lot to do, and I know they don't have enough provisions, and I can do this. I'll take a couple of donkeys with some food on it and some bread on it, and maybe it will help. Maybe it will help. And the chapter ends by saying when he got to the Jordan, he was refreshed. You know, and we hook Jordan up not just with the land of Palestine, don't we? We see this as a place that when we cross it, things are going to be different, don't we? We see that, and we use it in our songs, we use it everywhere else. And the reason we do that is because this scene and other scenes like it, when we cross the river, it's going to be all right. He's refreshed just being there close to it. And if we had time to look at the rest of the chapters of this story, we would see that word comes to him, you got to get on across the river because they're coming and they're coming after you. But here we have this amazing picture of testing. I think as an invitation, what we might do is we might all pray that we will have wisdom to recognize the test when it comes, and that we will have the courage to face it, and that we will have there will be enough good in us, enough faith in us, that we will get through it. Now, God promises us that we can have faith if by reading the Word of God and by testing the faith that we have. He also promises us that we'll have wisdom if we ask for it. And we should ask for it. And he also promises us we can have peace that passes understanding. And he also promises us that we can have courage. Those are promises from God that we can have. And you're going to need every one of them when we go through the valley of the shadow. If you need to come to Jesus, this is the time. Won't you come while we stand and sing?